some devotees, as revealed scriptures give evidence, have had immediate results by such association, although this is not possible for all. For example, the Kumaras immediately became devotees simply by smelling the incense in the temple. Bilva Mangala Thakur simply heard about Krishna and then immediately gave up his beautiful girlfriend and started out for Mathura and Vrindavan, where he became a perfect Vaishnav. So these statements are not overestimations, nor are they stories. They are actual facts, but are true for certain devotees and do not necessarily apply to all. These descriptions, even if considered overestimations, must be taken as they are in order to divert our attention from the fleeting material beauty to the eternal beauty of Krishna consciousness. And for a person who is already in contact with Krishna consciousness, the described results are not unusual. Some scholars argue that simply by following the principles of varna and ashram, one can gradually rise to the perfections reached by practicing devotional service. But this argument is not accepted by the great authorities. Lord Chaitanya also condemned this idea while he was talking with Ramananda Roy about the gradual development of devotional service. He rejected the idea of the importance of Varnashram Dharma when it was put forward by Ramananda Roy. He said that this advancement of Varna and Ashram is merely external. There is a higher principle. In Bhagavad Gita also, the Lord says that one has to give up all other principles of elevation and take simply to the method of Krishna consciousness. That will help one in achieving the highest perfection of life. In the 11th canto, 20th chapter, verse 9 of Srimad Bhagavatam, the Lord Himself says, quote, "One should execute the prescribed duties of Varna and Ashram as long as he has not developed spontaneous attachment for hearing about my pastimes and activities." Unquote. In other words, the prescribed forms of Varna and Ashram are ritualistic ceremonies of religion intended for economic development, sense gratification, or salvation. All of these things are recommended for persons who have not developed Krishna consciousness. In fact, all such activities are recommended in the revealed scriptures only to bring one to the point of Krishna consciousness. But one who has already developed spontaneous attachment for Krishna does not require to execute the duties prescribed in the scriptures. And now chapter 14, devotional qualifications. Lokanam hitakaranam tribhuvane manam saranyakaranam nana shastra vicharane kanipunam saddharma. Some scholars recommend that knowledge and renunciation are important factors for elevating oneself to devotional service. But actually, that is not a fact. Actually, the cultivation of knowledge or renunciation, which are favorable for achieving a footing in Krishna consciousness, may be accepted in the beginning, but ultimately they may also come to be rejected, for devotional service is dependent on nothing other than the sentiment or desire for such service. It requires nothing more than sincerity. It is the opinion of expert devotees that mental speculation and the artificial austerities of yoga practice may be favorable for becoming liberated from material contamination, but they will also make one's heart harder and harder. They will not help at all in the progress of devotional service. These processes are therefore not favorable for entering into the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Actually, Krishna consciousness, devotional service itself, is the only way of advancing in devotional life. Devotional service is absolute. It is both the cause and the effect. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the cause and effect of all that be, and to approach Him, the Absolute, the process of devotional service, which is also absolute, has to be adopted. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita by the Lord Himself. Quote, "One can understand me only through devotional service." Unquote. In beginning his teaching of the Gita, the Lord said to Arjuna, quote, "Because you are my devotee, I shall teach these secrets to you." Unquote. Vedic knowledge means ultimately to understand the Supreme Lord, and the process of entering into His kingdom is devotional service. That is accepted by all authentic scriptures. Mental speculators neglect the process of devotional service, and by simply trying to defeat others in philosophical research, they fail to develop the ecstasy of devotion. In the 11th canto, 20th chapter, verse 31 of Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna says, quote, "My dear Uddhava, for persons who are seriously engaged in my service, the cultivation of philosophical speculation and artificial renunciation are not very favorable. When a person becomes my devotee, he automatically attains the fruits of the renunciation of material enjoyment, and he gets sufficient knowledge to understand the absolute truth." Unquote. That is the test of advancement in devotional service. A devotee cannot be in darkness because the Lord shows him special favor and enlightens him from within. In the 11th canto, 20th chapter, verses 32 and 33 of Srimad Bhagavatam, the Lord further instructs Uddhava, quote, "My dear friend, the profits derived from fruitive activities, austerities, the culture of philosophical knowledge, renunciation, the practice of mystic yoga, charity, and all similar auspicious activities are automatically achieved by my devotees, those who are simply attached to me by loving service. These devotees have everything at their disposal, but they desire nothing outside of my devotional service. If ever a devotee should desire some material profit, like promotion to the heavenly planets, or some spiritual profit, to go to the Vaikunthas, by my causeless mercy, his desires are very easily fulfilled." Unquote. Actually, a person who is developing Krishna consciousness and still has some attachment to material enjoyment will soon be freed from such a tendency by regularly discharging devotional service under the instruction of a bona fide spiritual master. Srila Rupa Goswami, then, recommends that one should not be attached to material sense enjoyment, but should accept everything enjoyable which is in relationship to Krishna. For example, eating is necessary, and one wants some palatable dishes to satisfy his sense of taste. So in that case, for the satisfaction of Krishna, rather than for the satisfaction of the tongue, some palatable dishes may be prepared and offered to Krishna. Then it is renunciation. Let the palatable dishes be prepared, but unless they are offered to Krishna, one should not accept them for eating. This vow of rejecting anything which is not offered to Krishna is actually renunciation. and by such renunciation, one is able to satisfy the demands of the senses. The impersonalists, who try to avoid everything material, may undergo severe austerities, but they miss the opportunity of being engaged in the service of the Lord. Thus, their renunciation is not sufficient for perfection. There are many instances where, following such artificial renunciation without any contact with devotional service, the impersonalist again fell down and became attracted to material contamination. There are many supposed renouncers, even at the present moment, who officially become sannyasis or renouncers, and outwardly claim that spiritual existence is truth and material existence untruth. In this way, artificially, they make a show of renunciation of the material world. However, because they cannot reach the point of devotional service, they fail to achieve the goal, and they again come back to material activities such as philanthropic work and political agitation. There are many examples of so-called sannyasis who gave up the world as untruth, but again came to the material world because they were not seeking their real repose at the lotus feet of the Lord. One should not give up anything which can be utilized in the service of the Lord. That is a secret of devotional service. Anything that can be utilized in advancing Krishna consciousness and devotional service should be accepted. For instance, we are using many machines for the advancement of our present Krishna consciousness movement, machines like typewriters, dictating machines, tape recorders, microphones, and airplanes. Sometimes people ask us, why are you utilizing material products if you condemn the advancement of material civilization? But actually, we do not condemn. We simply ask people to do whatever they are doing in Krishna consciousness. This is the same principle on which, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna advised Arjuna to utilize his fighting abilities in devotional service. Similarly, we are utilizing these machines for Krishna's service. With such sentiment for Krishna or Krishna consciousness, we can accept everything. If the typewriter can be utilized for advancing our Krishna consciousness movement, we must accept it. Similarly, the dictating machine or any other machine must be used. Our vision is that Krishna is everything. Krishna is the cause and effect, and nothing belongs to us. Krishna's things must be used in the service of Krishna. That is our vision. This does not mean, however, that we should give up the principles of discharging devotional service or neglect abiding by the rules and regulations prescribed therein. In the neophyte stage of devotion, one must follow all the principles regulated by the authority of the spiritual master. The acceptance and rejection of things should always be in pursuance of the devotional principles. Not that one can independently manufacture some idea of what should be accepted or rejected. The spiritual master, as the visible manifestation of Krishna, is necessary, therefore, to direct the devotee on behalf of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The spiritual master must never be carried away by an accumulation of wealth or a large number of followers. A bona fide spiritual master will never become like that. But sometimes, if a spiritual master is not properly authorized and only on his own initiative becomes a spiritual master, he may be carried away by an accumulation of wealth and large numbers of disciples. His is not a very high grade of devotional service. If a person is carried away by such achievements, then his devotional service becomes slackened. One should therefore strictly adhere to the principles of disciplic succession. A Krishna-conscious person, being naturally purified, has no need of developing any other purificatory process of thought or action. On account of his being highly elevated in Krishna consciousness, he has already acquired all the good qualities and is following the rules and regulations prescribed for the mystic yogic process. Such rules are automatically practiced by the devotees. A concrete example is the quality of non-violence, which is considered a good qualification. A devotee is naturally non-violent and therefore doesn't have to practice non-violence separately. Some people seek purification by joining a vegetarian movement, but a devotee is automatically a vegetarian. He doesn't need to practice separately in this matter, or to join any society for vegetarians. He is automatically a vegetarian. There are many other instances showing that a devotee needn't practice anything but Krishna consciousness. All the good qualities of the demigods automatically develop within him. Those who are intentionally practicing to be vegetarians or to become non-violent may have good qualifications by a material estimation, but these qualifications are not sufficient to make them devotees. A vegetarian is not necessarily a devotee, nor is a non-violent person. But a devotee is automatically both vegetarian and nonviolent. We must conclude, therefore, that vegetarianism or nonviolence is not the cause of devotion. In this connection, there is a story in the Skanda Purana about a hunter who was converted into a great devotee under the instruction of Narad Muni. When the hunter became a perfect devotee, he was not prepared to kill even an ant. Parvat Muni, a friend of Narad's, saw the wonderful transformation of the hunter by devotional service and remarked, "My dear hunter, your unwillingness to kill even an ant is not very astonishing. Any person who develops the devotional attitude has all the good qualities automatically manifested in his person. A devotee is never a cause of distress to anyone." Sri Rupa Goswami affirms herein that purification of consciousness, purification of bodily activities, austerities, peace of mind, etc., all become automatically manifest in the person who is engaged in devotional service. Sri Rupa Goswami affirms herein that there are 9 different kinds of devotional service, which are listed as hearing, chanting, remembering, serving, worshipping the deity in the temple, praying, carrying out orders, serving Krishna as a friend, and sacrificing everything for him. Each and every one of these processes is so powerful that if anyone follows even one of them, he can achieve the desired perfection without fail. For example, if one is attached simply to hearing about the Lord, and another is attached to chanting the glories of the name, both will achieve their desired goal in devotional service. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, this has been explained. One may execute 1, 2, 3, or all the different processes of devotional service, and at the ultimate end, he will achieve the desired goal of being established in devotional service. There are concrete examples of how a devotee discharged one of these services and achieved perfection. King Parikshit achieved the desired goal of life simply by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. Shukdev Goswami achieved the desired goal of life simply by reciting Srimad Bhagavatam. Prahlad Maharaj became successful in his devotional service by always remembering the Lord. Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, was successful by engaging herself in massaging the lotus feet of the Lord. King Prithu became successful by worshipping in the temple. Akrura became successful by offering prayers. Hanuman became successful by rendering personal service to Lord Ramachandra. Arjuna became successful by being a friend of Krishna. And Bali Maharaj became successful simply by offering all of his possessions to Krishna. There are also examples of devotees who discharged all the different items together. In the 9th canto, 4th chapter, verses 18, 19, and 20 of Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a statement about Maharaj Ambarish, who followed every one of the devotional processes. In these verses, Shukdev Goswami says, quote, King Ambarish first of all concentrated his mind on the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, and then engaged his speech in describing the pastimes and activities of the Lord. He engaged his hands in washing the temple of the Lord. He engaged his ears in hearing of the transcendental glories of the Lord. He engaged his eyes in seeing the beautiful deity in the temple. He engaged his body in associating with the pure devotees of the Lord. When you associate with someone, you have to sit down together, eat together, etc. And in this way, the touch of your body with his body is inevitable. Ambarish Maharaj made his association only with pure devotees and did not allow his body to be touched by anyone else. He engaged his nostrils in smelling the flowers and tulsi offered to Krishna, and he engaged his tongue in tasting Krishna prasad, or food prepared specifically for offering to the Lord, the remnants of which are taken by the devotees. Maharaj Ambarish was able to offer very nice prasad to Krishna because he was a king and had no scarcity of finances. He used to offer Krishna the most royal dishes and would then taste the remnants as Krishna prasad. There was no scarcity in his royal style because he had a very beautiful temple wherein the deity of the Lord was decorated with costly paraphernalia and offered high-grade food. So everything was available, and his engagement was always completely in Krishna consciousness. Unquote. The idea is that we should follow in the footsteps of great devotees. If we are unable to execute all the different items of devotional service, we must try to execute at least one of them, as exemplified by previous acharyas. If we are engaged in the execution of all the items of devotional service, as was Maharaj Ambarish, then the perfection of devotional service is guaranteed from each one of these items. With the first complete engagement, one becomes automatically detached from material contamination, and liberation becomes the maidservant of the devotee. This idea is confirmed by Bilva Mangal Thakur. If one develops unalloyed devotion to the Lord, liberation will follow the devotee as his maidservant. Srila Rupa Goswami says that the regulative principles of devotional service are sometimes described by authorities as the path of serving the Lord in opulence. And now chapter 15, Spontaneous Devotional Service.
त्रिभुवने मनौ शरण्याकरौ नाना शास्त्र
Examples of spontaneous devotional service can be easily seen in Krishna's direct associates in Vrindavan. The spontaneous dealings of the residents of Vrindavan in relationship with Krishna are called Raganuga. These beings don't have to learn anything about devotional service. They are already perfect in all regulative principles and have achieved the spontaneous loving service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For example, the cowherd boys who are playing with Krishna do not have to learn by austerities or penances or yogic practice how to play with him. They have passed all tests of regulative principles in their previous lives, and as a result, they are now elevated to the position of direct association with Krishna as his dear friends. Their spontaneous attitude is called Raganuga Bhakti. Srila Rupa Goswami has defined Raganuga Bhakti as spontaneous attraction for something while completely absorbed in thoughts in it, with an intense desire of love. Devotional service executed with such feelings of spontaneous love is called Raganuga Bhakti. Devotional service under the heading of Raganuga can be further divided into two categories. One category is called sensual attraction, and the other is called relationship. In this connection, there is a statement by Narad Muni to Yudhishthir in the 7th canto, first chapter, verse 30 of Srimad Bhagavatam. There, Narad says, quote, "My dear king, there are many devotees who first become attracted to the personality of Godhead for purposes of sense gratification, from being envious of him, out of fear of him, or from desiring to associate affectionately with him. Ultimately, these attractions become freed from all material contamination, and gradually the worshipper develops spiritual love and achieves that ultimate goal of life desired by the pure devotee." Unquote. The gopis may be considered to be examples of spontaneous love in sensual attraction. The gopis are young girls, and Krishna is a young boy. Superficially, it seems that the gopis are attracted to Krishna on grounds of sex. Similarly, King Kamsa was attracted to Krishna because of fear. Kamsa was always fearful of Krishna because it had been foretold that his sister's son, Krishna, would kill him. Shishupal was also always envious of Krishna. And the descendants of King Yadu, due to their family relationship with Krishna, were always thinking of him as one of their members. All of these different kinds of devotees have a spontaneous attraction for Krishna in different categories, and they achieve the same desired goal of life. The attraction of the gopis for Krishna and the affection of the members of the Yadu dynasty are both accepted as spontaneous or Raganuga. The attraction of Kamsa to Krishna in fear and the attraction of Shishupal in envy are not accepted as devotional service, however, because their attitudes are not favorable. Devotional service should be executed only in a favorable frame of mind. Therefore, according to Srila Rupa Goswami, such attractions are not considered to be in devotional service. Again, he analyzes the affection of the Yadus. If it is on the platform of friendship, then it is spontaneous love. But if it is on the platform of regulative principles, then it is not. And only when affection comes to the platform of spontaneous love is it counted in the category of pure devotional service. there may be some difficulty in understanding that both the gopis and Kamsa achieved the same goal. So this point should be clearly understood because the attitudes of Kamsa and Shishupal were different from that of the gopis. Although in all these cases, the focus is on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and all of the devotees are elevated to the spiritual world, there is still a distinction between these two classes of souls. In the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, it is said that the Absolute Truth is one, and that he is manifested as impersonal Brahman, Paramatma or Supersoul, and Bhagavan or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Here is a spiritual distinction. Although Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan are the same and one Absolute Truth, devotees like Kamsa or Shishupal could attain only to the Brahman effulgence. They could not have realization of Paramatma or Bhagavan. That is the distinction. An analogy can be given with the sun globe and the sunshine. To remain in the sunshine does not mean one has gone to the sun globe. The temperature of the sun globe is different from the temperature of the sunshine. One who has gone through the sunshine in jet planes or in spaceships has not necessarily gone to the sun globe. Although the sunshine and the sun globe are actually one and the same, still there is a distinction, for one is the energy and one is the energetic source. The Absolute Truth and his bodily effulgence are in the same way simultaneously one and different. Kamsa and Shishupal attained to the Absolute Truth, but they were not allowed to enter into the Goloka Vrindavan abode. Impersonalists and the enemies of the Lord are, because of attraction to God, allowed to enter into his kingdom, but they are not allowed to enter into the Vaikuntha planets or the Goloka Vrindavan planet of the Supreme Lord. To enter the kingdom and to enter the king's palace are not the same thing. Srila Rupa Goswami is trying here to describe the different achievements of the impersonalists and the personalists. Generally, those who are impersonalists and are inimical to the Supreme Personality of Godhead get entrance only into the impersonal Brahman when and if they reach spiritual perfection. The impersonalist philosophers are in one sense like the enemies of the Lord, because the out-and-out enemies of the Lord and the impersonalists are both allowed to enter only into the impersonal effulgence of the Brahma Jyoti. So it is to be understood that they are of similar classification. And actually, the impersonalists are enemies of God, because they cannot tolerate the unparalleled opulence of the Lord. They try always to place themselves on the same level with the Lord. That is due to their envious attitude. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has proclaimed the impersonalists to be offenders of the Lord. The Lord is so kind, however, that even though they are his enemies, they are still allowed to enter into the spiritual kingdom and remain in the impersonal Brahma Jyoti, the undifferentiated light of the Absolute. Sometimes an impersonalist may gradually elevate himself to the personal conception of the Lord. Bhagavad Gita confirms this. Quote, "After many births and deaths, he who is actually in knowledge surrenders unto me." Unquote. By such surrender, an impersonalist can be elevated to the Vaikuntha Loka or spiritual planet, where, as a surrendered soul, he attains bodily features like those of the Lord. In the Brahmanda Purana, it is stated, quote, those who have achieved liberation from material contamination, and those who are demons and are killed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, become absorbed in the Brahman concept of life and reside in the spiritual sky of the Brahmajyoti, unquote. That spiritual sky is far beyond the material sky, and it is confirmed also in the Bhagavad Gita that beyond this material sky there is another eternal sky. The enemies and the impersonalists may be allowed to enter into this Brahman effulgence, but the devotees of Krishna are promoted all the way to the spiritual planets. Because the pure devotees have developed their spontaneous love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they are allowed to enter into the spiritual planets to enjoy spiritual bliss in association with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the 10th canto, 87th chapter, verse 23 of Srimad Bhagavatam, the Vedas personified address the Lord in this way, quote, my dear Lord, yogis meditate upon your localized feature, and thus they achieve the spiritual perfection of being merged in the impersonal Brahmajyoti. Persons who treat you as an enemy achieve the same perfection without meditating. The gopis who are embraced by your serpentine hands and who have such lusty attitudes also achieve the same perfection. And as far as we are concerned, being different demigods in charge of the different parts of the Vedic knowledge, we are always following in the footsteps of the gopis. Thus we hope to attain the same perfection. Unquote. By the same perfection, we must always remember the example of the sun and the sunshine. Those who are impersonalists can merge into the sunshine-like Brahmajyoti, whereas those who are in love with the Supreme Person enter into the supreme abode of the Lord, Goloka Vrindavan. The lusty attitude of the gopis does not refer to any sort of sex indulgence. Srila Rupa Goswami explains that this lusty desire refers to the devotee's particular attitude of association with Krishna. Every devotee in his perfectional stage has a spontaneous attraction to the Lord. This attraction is sometimes called the lusty desire of the devotee. The lust is the devotee's excessive desire to serve the Lord in a particular capacity. Such a desire may seem to be a desire for enjoying the Lord, but actually the endeavor is to serve the Lord in that capacity. For example, a devotee may be desiring to associate with the Personality of Godhead as his cowherd friend. He will want to serve the Lord by assisting him in controlling the cows in the pasturing ground. This may appear to be a desire to enjoy the company of the Lord, but actually it is spontaneous love, serving him by assisting in managing the transcendental cows. Sensual attraction. This extreme desire to serve the Lord is manifest in the transcendental land of Vraja, and it is specifically manifested among the gopis. The gopis' love for Krishna is so elevated that for our understanding, it is sometimes explained as being lusty desire. The author of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Kaviraj Krishnadas, has explained the distinction between lusty desire and the service attitude in this statement. Quote, lusty desire refers to the desire to gratify one's personal senses, and transcendental desire refers to the desire for serving the senses of the Lord. Unquote. In the material world, there is no such thing as a lover's wanting to please the senses of his beloved. Actually, in the material world, everyone wants mainly to gratify his own personal senses. The gopis, however, wanted nothing at all but to gratify the senses of the Lord, and there is no instance of this in the material world. Therefore, the gopis' ecstatic love for Krishna is sometimes described by scholars as being like the lusty desire of the material world. But actually, this should not be taken as a literal fact. It is simply a way of trying to understand the transcendental situation. Great devotees up to the standard of Uddhava are very dear friends of the Lord, and they desire to follow in the footsteps of the gopis. So the gopis' love for Krishna is certainly not material lusty desire. Otherwise, how could Uddhava aspire to follow in their footsteps? Another instance is Lord Chaitanya himself. After accepting the sannyas order of life, he was very, very strict about avoiding association with women, but still he taught that there is no better method of worshipping Krishna than that conceived by the gopis. Thus, the gopis' method of worshipping the Lord, as if impelled by lusty desire, was praised very highly even by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This very fact means that although the attraction of the gopis for Krishna appears to be lusty, it is not in the least bit material. Unless one is fully situated in the transcendental position, the relationship of the gopis with Krishna is very difficult to understand. But because it appears to be just like ordinary dealings of young boys and girls, it is sometimes misinterpreted to be like the ordinary sex of this material world. Unfortunately, persons who cannot understand the transcendental nature of the love affairs of the gopis and Krishna take it for granted that Krishna's love affairs with the gopis are mundane transactions, and therefore they sometimes indulge in painting licentious pictures in some modernistic style. On the other hand, the lusty desire of Kubja is described by learned scholars as being almost lusty desire. Kubja was a hunchbacked woman who also wanted Krishna with a great ecstatic love. But her desire for Krishna was almost mundane, and so her love cannot be compared to the love of the gopis. Her loving affection for Krishna is called Kama Praya, or almost like the gopis' love for Krishna.
Nana Shastra Vichar Naika Nipunam Sadharma Sangasthapakam Lokanam Hitakaranam Tribhuvane Manam Saranam.